Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home Podcast. Wherever you are on your fostering or adopting journey, we're here to provide the resources and tools you need. And I think today's guest will be a great source of encouragement to you. I am so excited today, I say that a lot, but to welcome Brittany Salmon with us today. Brittany, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, how is life? I know that you've been working on degrees and writing books and all that, and you just not too long ago added number 4 to your family. So just catch us up, and we want to talk about your new book that's released that I absolutely am passionate about. But just tell us about your family and how the Lord brought all that together and what life's looking like for you guys right now.
Absolutely. Sure. So, like you said, my name is Brittany, but I'm married to my husband, Ben, for 12 years this fall. And we actually met in seminary at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. And we met at a church campus, but one of his buddies said, hey, she works at the seminary there and you should swing by her office. And so he started swinging by my office. It turns out we had a class together, and the professor who we had a class with, we still joke, he's like, I remember you flirting throughout that class. And I was like, well, it turned out, it worked out well, you know.
Many a matches made in those classrooms, I'm sure.
Yes, absolutely. But we have 4 children, Felicity and Noel. They're what we call in the adopted states, they're biological children.
Right.
So I birthed them, but they're twins and they are 9, almost 10 years old. Jude is 6 years old, and we have a domestic infant open transracial adoption, which just basically means that we adopted him as a baby and he's of a different ethnicity than us. But the open part means that we have an ongoing open relationship with his first family. And then our son Zeke, who is just turned 2, we adopted him in January of 2020, right before the pandemic. And it's a domestic infant, open transracial adoption. So we have an open adoption with his first family as well. And we're actually in the process of adopting baby number 5.
Oh, wow.
So we're mid-process there. We're in the waiting season where everything's done and ready, and just waiting to see what the Lord does.
So would that be, can I ask if that'll be domestic or international or?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a domestic open adoption. That's the one thing that we've, of requested. And, infant is kind of a loose term. It's not necessarily just a newborn, and we keep, for our family, we've chosen to keep birth order. So the child will be younger than Zeke. And so, our 4th child, so he'll be under 2. Or well, he or she will be under 2. Sorry.
Well, you're going to be quite the busy mama. and I would love to tell you it gets easier as they get older, but it doesn't get easier as they get older. So, but I'm here for you.
Oh, awesome. Well, I'll be calling.
Oh, listen. Well, I know the name of your book is It Takes More Than Love. And it does take love to make a family, right? And so
Absolutely.
We know that. But I love your title. Tell me about that, how you came to that title.
Well, in adoption spaces, and even in the church, whether you're involved in adoption or you've just been exposed to the idea of it, a lot of times there's this concept that love is all you need to make a family. And so that, on one hand, I absolutely believe that love is so important to a family. It is critical. It is the foundation of our families. But when it comes to adoption, love, it takes more than love. It can only get you so far. And
That's
when we
right.
think about the idea of love, we're not just talking about this emotion or this feeling towards your child of, oh, if I just love them enough, they're going to be able to overcome all this trauma. If I could just love them enough, it'll be enough to meet some of all these needs, these unique needs that an adoption family has. And that's not true. So instead, the approach that we've taken as a family is it takes more than love, but love is the fuel. It is the catalyst that equips you and gets you to, trauma-informed counseling and biblical counseling. It's the thing that equips you along the way when the journey is tough and it's hard and you are in the valleys of parenting. It's love that sustains you, but it's not all you need.
Right. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. But you talk a lot about in your book, and I love the title, but you just cover so many things in It Takes More Than Love. But the first part of your book is called Boards for the Bridges. That is so clever. Tell me about why, you know, how you came up with that and what you mean by boards for the bridges.
Well, you know, I was, when we started this journey, it was right around the time when Latasha Morrison started her organization, Be the Bridge.
Yeah.
And it's an organization that is all about racial reconciliation and restoration. And I love that imagery of it's a bridge. And in so much of her work and watching her, what she did was she's just taking people on their next step of the journey. And I think that that's so important when talking about adoption education and growth, is this book is not building the whole bridge.
Right.
But hopefully it'll get you a few boards in your bridge to get going along the way for prospective adoptive families or for people supporting adoptive families or for just adoptive parents who've been in the journey for, you know, over a decade. My hope and prayer is that it'll just provide a few more steps to take the next few steps in your journey of growth. You know, I think sometimes I want to, in my human nature, just build the whole bridge right away, super fast, very quick. But that's not how a bridge is built, you know, and that's not how you cross a bridge. You cross it one board at a time. And so, just that imagery of just putting a few more, you know, tools in your tool belt, a few more boards in your bridge, was kind of the imagery that came to mind whenever I was creating this.
Yeah, I think it's great. I love that. And one of those boards is being race conscious. But what does it look like to be race conscious?
You know, it's one of those things where being a race conscious parent, especially. This book is not just for white adoptive parents. I want to be clear on that.
Right.
There are all different ethnicities who are adopting transracially, and praise God for that. And I do know that right now the predominant ethnicity is white, but it's growing in the different ethnicities that are also practicing adoption and foster care. And so race conscious parenting is simply whenever a child is placed into your care and your home, to put it in a nutshell, it's being mindful of their original ethnicity. And it's not erasing where they came from. It's saying, okay, let's say a Hispanic couple adopts a white child. And if that's the case, a white American child, if so, they are going to honor their culture and their ethnicity by learning about their culture. They're going to learn about their hair care. They need to learn about their foods and their language and the many different things and resources that that child will need to succeed in their culture as a white American child. And so as for our family specifically, my husband and I are white Americans, and one of our sons is Puerto Rican and Native American, and the other son is African American. And so we have two different ethnicities in our, well, three technically, but we have two different children with very specific needs. And we're wanting to learn about their ethnicities, learn about what it's going to be like for my son, Jude, when he's a 25-year-old man outside of my home as a Black American. What does that look like? That's different. And I think, you know, in some ways, Christian families, regardless of their ethnicities, you know, when it comes to our girls, our daughters and our sons, there are things I'm telling my daughters and saying, all right, girls, when you go into a situation like this, you need to be mindful of this because we want to protect you as women, you know, we're teaching those sort of things. And so we already have the tool set and the verbiage as monocultural families, even of, all right, we parent our kids a little bit differently depending on gender. But it's the same thing with ethnicity, is we want to take some of those cultural, some of those cultural implications and say, all right, so we're going to teach our kids how to do this. And we're not going to be colorblind. We're not going to erase our sons' ethnicities. We're going to celebrate them because God ordained their ethnicities and our children are made in the image of God. And these differences that we all bring to the table are beautiful, and they beautifully reflect a good and glorious creative God.
Yeah. And, you know, you know, a colorblind approach, it can cause great damage to a child. It's like I've seen it. Families call me when a child goes through puberty and realize, I don't look like any of you guys, you know?
Yes.
And that's just a little late in the game to be talking about it.
And when it comes as a shock,
you
know, when it comes as a shock of, oh my goodness, I don't match my family.
Yeah.
We've never talked about this before. It's really problematic. And I think that's one of the things is listening to adult adoptees and specific transracial adoptees. A lot of them say, not all of them, and I'm not going to speak on their behalf, but from listening to the things I've learned is my parents loved me.
Yeah.
They gave me a house. They fed me. They gave me love. However, they did not equip me to be a Hispanic American, or they did not equip me to be an Asian American. And it came as a real shock when I realized that I have to live as embodied in this world mm-hmm. as a different ethnicity than my parents. And I don't know how to do it. And it causes real problems.
Yeah. And when, like you said, when we honor that, when we honor their ethnic heritage, you know, we are showing the greatness of God. We do foster care training here in the state of Georgia. I thought, how can I help? A lot of our listeners know this, but I thought, how can I even help more? You know, how can I? Because mm-hmm. it is, foster care is, you're stepping into a government-run system. And so how can I? So I just went and got trained by the state of Georgia. And anyway, we do this little activity with our families where the bead activity, I don't know if you've seen it, but you get this little cup of colored beads. And we ask families before they step into foster care or adoption, place a color bead in your cup of what color is your pediatrician? What color is your dentist? What color yes. are your best friends? And at first yes. they think that what's going on here? And then it hits them. I'm living in my own little ethnic world yes. over here. And I need to do some changing so that I can honor this child, you know, that I can show them that they are absolutely designed by the hand of God on purpose. And it's a beautiful, wonderful thing.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's the one thing, you know, I get asked the question on a regular basis, especially when people who they've seen our community, who we live life with, it's an incredibly diverse one. We live out in a pretty segregated town of West Texas mm-hmm. right now. And everyone thinks, oh no, it's a predominantly white city. And I'm like, you know, actually, there's a lot of diversity within the city. It's just segregated. And so they're like, how did you develop this community? And how did all this stuff happen? And we say over and over again, it's a lot easier than you think, but it's also harder in the yeah. sense of all you have to do is live life in diverse locations and do genuine life. We're not using people for the sake of diversity. It's no, we're putting our kids in city sports. We're not doing some of the private sports leagues. We're putting our kids at the local YMCA, and we're putting our kids in local city sports teams where they're going to meet other people who look like them. And we're making sure that we are going to schools in different areas. And I'm all about freedom of choice for schools. But for our family personally, in the location where we're at, we knew that we needed to go to a certain set of schools in order for there to be diverse staff and diverse population. And so we view it as a ministry. We're in the public school system in our city, and we love it. And it's been a phenomenal experience. But we've just made the decision to spend our money, spend our time and our resources in locations where other people who don't look like us are also doing the same. And it takes intentionality. But also, we're already doing these things. Our kids are already going to school. They're already in sports. They're mm-hmm. already doing those sorts of things. Let's be intentional with where we're going and where we're spending our money. And genuine relationships are made along the way. And it's been really cool to see. But the idea of representation, of course, when it comes to if you're adopting transracially, of course, you want your toys and your books and the things in your home to reflect that. And of course, the voices you're listening to as adults, the books you read, the lawyers you're hiring, the doctors you're placing yourself under, those things are so important. But we have to be doing life in community with real people at our dinner tables who don't look like us. Mm-hmm. If we're going to adopt transracially well, that has to happen. We have to be in community with other people. And honestly, it's been one of the biggest blessings in our family's life. We have learned so much. And we have been, some of our dearest friends are people who don't look like us, but they don't look like our children. They're just of different ethnicities.
That's right.
Ethnicities.
Yeah.
And choosing to be in a multicultural community where our babysitters and our friends' kids and people don't look like us or think like us, it has been such a gift to our family as we've learned, A, how much we have to learn in life, but also what a glorious God we serve mm-hmm. that is expressed in 1,000 different ways all over our globe through different ethnicities and cultures, and the way our friends see God and love God. It's been I don't know. It's just been such a blessing to our family. I think people are fearful of it. And every time I talk about it, I'm like, it's been amazing.
Yeah.
There are times it's hard. And there are times when talking about race and racism and some of these things are difficult, but it's been a gift to have these conversations in a community with a variety of different perspectives to point out our blind spots, but also to bring us along and to encourage our family in a biblical, non-judgmental brother and sister, like familial sort of way.
Yeah.
It's been such a gift. One of the things God has done in my heart is when I first entered into the adoption spaces, I would have never imagined the relationship that I currently have with my kids' first families.
Oh, that's great. That's so beautiful.
They are truly a gift.
Yeah.
Now, what that doesn't mean is that they're perfect. What that doesn't mean is that there's zero messes or that it's always easy. That's not the case. But there, God has softened my heart and chipped away at some of my pride and preconceived ideas, and in a way that has been such a gift. So that now there's some freedom with our relationships where we obviously live very different lives, and obviously adoption happens because brokenness exists, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were not in seasons where they saw themselves as able to parent, for a variety of reasons, but we now have such a good relationship with our kids' first moms, and that I've seen the Lord move. And one of the questions that Ben and I have asked ourselves is, adoption is, yes, it solely should be about the health and welfare of a child. But we believe that God can change the hearts and souls of all people involved. What if when believers got involved in adoption, we weren't just about bringing a child into our family? What if we were also about seeing God transform the lives of their first families as
yes.
well? What if?
Yeah.
What if? And so especially our believers who are involved in foster care, what if you are called to hope and believe, and when no one else does, but you hope and believe that no one's too far gone from the reach of God's love, so far that no matter what happens, whether that child's whether the first parent's rights are terminated eventually, or whether restoration happens, what if you believe that God's love was big enough for your kids' first families
yes.
as well? And that is something that we have been praying for and asking God to convict us continually. Okay, are we praying for our kids' first families? What about their grandparents? What about their aunts and uncles? Are we praying and believing that God can redeem a full family line?
Yeah.
What if?
Yeah. And it's just great. And I know in your new book, It Takes More Than Love, you bring up, and it's a passage I love, because right now I'm really more in foster, deeper in foster care right now in my city than I am in adoption. But it's just the season of life right now. But you bring up a passage I absolutely love. And if we read above and beyond it, we see in Jeremiah 29:7, God spoke through the prophet Jeremiah and said, listen, here's where you are right now, and I want you to have the welfare of your city. You know, you're not in the promised land anymore, but I want you to have the welfare of your city in your heart, on the forefront of your mind. And you bring up that as believers, as the body of Christ, we should always champion the flourishing of others in our community, in our city. I can't think of a better way to do that.
Well, and that's the thing is my welfare, my personal flourishing is tied up in the flourishing of our children in our city, but also the birth mothers and birth fathers in our city.
Yeah.
Like my flourishing as an adoptive mom has to be tied up in the flourishing of my kids' first family.
Yeah.
My life now is no longer just about loving my children. It's also loving my children's family as well. It goes beyond that. And I believe that the Lord can sustain that. And that might seem hard or scary to others. And that's why I want to encourage folks and say, it has been one of the greatest blessings in my life for my flourishing to be tied up in the flourishing of others.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Totally agree. And to see the Lord bring such a continual step toward healing, like every day, you can see see progress. And in my own heart and in my own life and the wrong views and opinions that I had formed, how the Lord just crushes those and brings those around. Well, I tell you, the Lord's taught me volumes through my children. They've been so patient with me. They've taught me so much. And, you know, there's just so much I didn't know, Brittany, when I started this process. And so I'm so, so grateful for his endless grace. And I'm so grateful for your resource, for this new resource here. But I know toward the end of your book, you talk about having a holy imagination when it comes to the future of adoption. Share with us what you mean by that.
You know, like we've kind of already talked about, adoption is so complex. And, you know, complex issues really do require some creative solutions. But when it comes to the complexity of adoption, I think sometimes when I get into some of these spaces and it's a system, foster care, you know, it's a system when it comes to adoption, there's a system, there's organizations, and it goes beyond just our families. However, at the same time, there's so much brokenness and heartache surrounding these topics. And we've kind of done it one way for the last few decades. And one of the things that I've been praying for in my own life as an adoptive parent is, God, would you give me a holy imagination and eyes bent on redemption, so we can see some of the holes here that need to be filled.
Yeah.
And so even when like we just talked about, when it comes to birth mothers and first families of being for their flourishing, I think a question that we need to ask as adoptive parents is, what needs to change here? Whether it comes to the laws, whether it comes to the practices, best practices of adoption agencies and foster care, what needs to change here so every person can thrive, including our families, our children, adoptees, foster kids, social workers, first families? What needs to change so everyone here can thrive? And so she's a friend, but she's also an author. She said this once, but it was actually in a blog. It wasn't her book. I love this. I actually wrote this down when I read this many years ago. And when writing this book, I was like, I want to include this quote. She said, imagination is not frivolous. Imagination is not a frivolous liberal pursuit. It's a godly discipline. Without it, we will be tempted to rely solely on what we can see, hear, and know with our own senses, instead of opening ourselves to the greater reality of God, a reality that the small vision status quo is unable to grasp. And that was written by Sharon Miller. And that has been my prayer, is, God, what is it that we're missing here?
Yeah.
How can we work for the good of not just our individual families, but our adoption community and foster care community as a whole? And because we need people. We need all sorts of people, not just people who are willing to adopt children and foster children, but we need people who are, you know, just absolutely sold out for Jesus and say, you know what, I'm not going to adopt and foster right now. But you know what I can do? I can become a CASA volunteer.
Yeah, that's right.
I can be a respite worker. You know what I can't do right now? I can't necessarily adopt a child, but you know what I can do? I can contact our local foster care agency and say, hey, are there any women right now who have temporarily lost their parental rights, who have children in foster care, but they're wanting to get their life right and they want to be discipled or mentored? Could I mentor a woman?
Hmm.
Could I just meet with her for lunch? Are there single women in our church who come in to our church as pregnant and say, hey, you know what? We're going to walk beside you and we're going to help you parent this child as a community.
That's right.
What do you need? So we need eyes set on redemption and a holy imagination. And we need to start be praying and saying, God, how can we do this differently? Because the needs go well beyond just adopting and fostering children in order to really get at the root of the systemic issues. There is a whole crisis going on in our communities, especially with, you know, foster care, as you all know.
Mm-hmm.
What can we do to even prevent and come around families to prevent them from losing their parental rights?
That's right.
What sort of resources do they need? How can we invite these at-risk families into our churches and our communities and say, hey, you are safe here, you are loved here, and God is for you and he is for your flourishing, and Jesus is the answer, and let us help you? What does that look like for you?
Right.
What does that look like for me? And it's gonna be different depending on your city and your season and your family makeup. And but I think we need just hearts and eyes set on redemption, but asking God, God, give us a holy imagination for what this could look like.
Absolutely.
What are you calling me towards?
Yeah. And I, you know, and as I move toward kind of the other side of middle age, you know, in life, it's a great time when we're facing emptiness or we just have like one left at home or whatever. You can enter the system in some way. And like you said, Brittany, it will look different for everyone. And so I encourage everyone to go on sendrelief.org, look on our foster care page, and we will help you find that. Listen to some of the podcasts. I talk about that a lot. How can you enter the system? And again, like you said, it'll look different from everyone. God's just equipped us all differently. And we have to go to the system with great humility and say, how can I help you? Not yes. Here's all I bring to the table, but how can I help you? Well, Brittany,
absolutely.
This has been such a great discussion. I've loved talking with you. I can't wait to have you back. But in your new book, It Takes More Than Love, what a great resource for families who are feeling called into this ministry. Maybe they haven't even filled out one application yet or talked to one foster agency, or maybe they're knee deep in it, or maybe they're like me, you know, they're seasoned. You and I have been in it a while. But it taught me so much. Like, I'm just so grateful for the Lord laying this on your heart. I really am.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Truly, I'm so grateful.
Thanks again for taking the time to listen in today. And I hope you found my conversation with Brittany Salmon as intriguing as I have. You know, May is National Foster Care Awareness Month. And we're seeing churches waking to the foster care crisis and orphan care in ways I could have never imagined. So if your home church isn't already engaged in caring for vulnerable children and their families within your own community, visit sendrelief.org and take a step towards bringing the love of Christ to children and families in need.